Okay, we're sitting here laughing today because we've been talking for 10 minutes already and we forgot to press live. But we're live here today from Living with the Spirit, Raw Talks podcast, me, Sarah, and we have a very special guest today. We have the intuitive empath healer, Lua Matus, which is, I would say, our teacher's teacher. I would say the teacher that we followed a lot that helped us start this journey. And yeah, my mind usually goes empty when I'm around you. This is always a funny phenomenon. So what are we talking about today, Sarah? I'm drawing blanks here.
Well, let's see if we can. So what we're doing here at Living with the Spirit is that we help people to, we offer a place where they can come and heal themselves. We offer deep detoxification. We offer a space of grounding and healing. And today we invited Luhan, our teacher. Thank you so much for being here. And to discuss a little bit about the healing process. And we will see also where the conversation takes us. So, before we hit press live, I loved what you said, that we offer a space with no judgment and no shame or blame, and that is what is needed for people to feel safe enough to come forward and to heal whatever needs to be healed. What would you say about that?
I've got to backtrack now. it's really important to have a space where, like you said, that that people feel very, very comfortable. They can unfold without any form of recrimination, so they can go comfortably into unraveling. But like we were talking about before, is that from a socially engineered perspective, people are used to going back to the past. They want to review the past and re-establish a connection with the past, which is amplifying the past, instead of seeing that the past is actually truly in the very moment that we communicate, because everything that's ever happened to us manifests right in front of us. And if we can decode exactly what somebody is unraveling in and sort of like the codes that they're using to re-establish an amplified point, which has nothing to do with the past, but with to do with a habitual repetitive narrative. So if you can capture that, then the person can unravel if they feel safe. Of course, they've got to feel safe. And getting to the point of what they're using to keep the amplification going, and what we can do to dissolve the amplification of something negative to a positive state of referencing, say, frequencies or higher frequencies, using the memory of higher frequencies instead of the memory of lower established emotional base, which reconnects the person with a lower emotional ebb, which is reinforced through the repetitive repetition of the dilemma they're going through. So it's like I said before, usually what I do is that if I find that that somebody tries to pre-program me or to establish a compromising circumstance where they get you to agree with the way that they are, instead of agreeing with that, you just because people love to. Or what would you say? It's very hard for me to recapture what I said before in terms of, it's terrible, isn't it? Getting you to agree to a symbiotic process, which has got nothing to do with what's really present in the room, but the preemptive motive to actually be in the room before they're in the room. So if somebody comes into the room with an idea which has already been thought about, it's been reflected upon, and as soon as they get there, they're not really in the room. They've got a preemptive motive that comes into the room, and they feel that maybe this might be the best thing to put on the table, but it's a protective mechanism to hide the deeper elements with it, which are hidden behind the preemptive motive to establish this is my understanding. And the understanding always leads you down the garden path instead of to directly to where the emphasis or the amplification is hidden behind the display, which is deemed as acceptable, but it's not really acceptable to the point that that you really can't get to the deep essence of something, because if you've got a preemptive motive coming into the room, then you ask the person that's in the room to actually combine with that and put you in a compromising position if you see something other than that that's been displayed. So this is the first thing I find, that whenever I meet someone, they may do this instead of dropping into silence and then allowing the true communication between the essence of the people is unraveled right in the very moment. Yeah, and then you deal with that moment, and that moment actually is the past and the future elements infusing without any thought forms or without any preemptive motive. And then you can walk upon the path that is highly obvious in terms of establishing communication with something that is already there to be seen. Mm. Hope I'm making sense.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So without the safety, this process cannot occur, right?
Yes, exactly. The person's got to feel very, very safe, but they've got to be willing to actually unfold very, very honestly. You know, it's if there's any hidden motives instead of hiding particular feelings, which you've got nothing to do with putting yourself on the table with integrity and saying, I've got this particular modus operandi, that if you hit it in the right position, it'll explode into the environment. And then you discover you're dealing with something different other than what the person's brought into the room. Mm. So, yeah, they have to feel safe. But usually people use a mechanism of a hidden agenda to actually hide the deeper reservoirs which needs to be seen, which are covered up maybe by anger, by shame, or anything like this. And behind that, like we said before, behind that usually is tears and sadness of regret. And if you can get to that, that's the point where things will break open, and the person will cry and the pressure out. And discover that the compromises have got to do with an emotional standardization, which has got nothing to do with the present moment. And that emotional standardization, which has been probably pre-programmed from childhood, then is sort of broken open, and then the floodgates start to work on the environment, and then everybody should be crying at that particular point. Yeah. Because usually when people in the room with me, if they cry with really genuine tears, I end up crying too. Yeah. Because then the true sense of feeling is then transmitted. And then the symbiotic relationship between anybody who wants to heal and the ones who believe they need to be healed then starts to transpire. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also group healing as well. Because if you cry about somebody else's burdens, then obviously those burdens are a trigger inside of yourself, because we're a world community that vibrates on a very, very specific level of awareness, and we're all very, very similar in terms of how we feel entrapped, how we feel like our voice has been maybe subdued by forces that are beyond our control in our households. So then it starts in our households. The first thing we've got to do, yeah.
Yeah, and that's so interesting because our center is like 1 acre, so it's not like we're living in the same house, but we live in the same place and we live together. And not a lot of retreat centers are, you know, inviting people into their homes, which sometimes people think that we are crazy by doing that. Like, what are you doing? You know, it's too close. But for us, it's such a big part of our healing. Because for us, it's about building a community and inviting people to a space that is 100% safe, that we create the frequency. And I think that is what is very unique. And I think that's what you're talking. So when you talk about building community, building the family home, it's like we're creating that situation that a lot of people didn't have.
Yeah.
And there's something magical that occurs when that happens.
Yeah, really true. There's been a lot of experimentation over the last 20 or 30 years, maybe even 50 years, where communities get together and it doesn't work because there's no general consensus about what evolution is all about, and it's all about communication. So you're doing something quite magical there. because it's like living in a household, and the and the bubble of your household then creates the I guess the disharmony, and the and then rebalancing that disharmony is like what we should do in the whole world. In terms of your community, you invite people in, it's not crazy. It's actually a very, very beautiful thing, because you're embracing people and you're asking them to become a family. And, you know, most people don't really, really feel embraced by their family. They feel degraded. They feel judged, and they can't do what they want to do. They've got to do exactly what the family unit believes. And there's a form of separation in terms of accepting somebody's ability to be in charge of their life and evolve in a way which everybody can witness. And this is a beautiful thing what you're doing, I believe. Yeah,
I think it's the part with no shame and no judgment, and just allowing the person to be whatever. So when we create the programs, we just create the start of the program, and then we follow the person and allow them to like open like a flower almost, and to release whatever it is that needs to be released. And it's very beautiful process.
Yeah, that's really the only way to do it, actually. Spontaneity. To be spontaneous is a beautiful thing, because then it tests you to be above what is occurring, so that you can apply yourself and then grow spiritually. And you've got to have a lot of times you've got to have intestinal fortitude to actually face that, because it's a very, very big challenge to adapt to everybody when there are other people to adapt to, and to allow people to like you say, to be a flower and to grow exactly in the purview of their inspiration is quite a unique thing. And when you discover, it's just like a child. When you discover what the child is talented at, then you promote the direction the child needs to go into. And I believe in society, this hasn't been done for all of our children to actually become fully engrossed in who they're really meant to be. And to discover that you can't do that through the mechanisms of our engineered world, really, it's very rare, actually. Yeah,
it's a deep process that people need to go through.
Yeah, it is very, very true.
But it's also very beautiful, the results that people are having, like the freedom that they can feel inside is extraordinary.
Yeah, and Thailand's a perfect place too. Because it's so warm and so friendly, and there's a lot of freedom there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thailand's my favorite country, actually. I was just talking to my wife this morning. It's, I said, well, the most beautiful place I've ever been is in Thailand. Yeah. And you have a sense of freedom just the moment you get there.
Yeah.
So if you get a center, and you can grow quite fast, you're in that environment. Good food, too.
Great fruits.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the healing process on a deeper level, what's happening in the body, there's so many processes that goes on, but sometimes I hear you talk about the emotional body and the water body, but sometimes we also talk about the energy from whatever we've been through is stored in the fascia. Could you share a little bit more about what's happening in the body?
Okay. When you look at the, say emotional body, the emotional body is affected by trauma. It's affected by, you don't really see someone dragging their joy along and saying, well, my joy is a problem. They only drag, when they drag something else from their past, that's caught in the reference of the emotions, where the water body and the fascia are quite unique. You can have elements implanted inside the fascia in terms of pre-programming somebody, or somebody being pre-programmed. So when you go through the fascia and you establish a line within the fascia, when you drop through the fascia, there's absolute silence. The mind is turned off. So the fascia is quite interesting in terms of what it manifests. Because when you go through the fascia and you have a rebound, you're completely switched off, because your mind doesn't have the repetitive loop of communication in terms of talking to what's going on. It watches it and goes through the fascial line. As it goes through the fascial line, the mind is switched off. So the fascia is basically 75% water. So when this occurs, the emotional body gets it becomes very, very still, because it's an electrical magnetic process in terms of what form of emotion you got stored. And when you go through the fascia, the moment you look at water or you intend something upon water, it becomes that. So the most interesting thing about the fascia, which I've learned over the years, is that it's not what you think. It actually switches your mind off. It switches your previous past emotions off, because when you're watching it, you assign your eyes, your ears, and your feeling to go through these particular channels. And because they're so unfamiliar, you hit a frequency which isn't corresponding to mind. It's corresponding to universal mind. And then as you progressively go through the fascia and then electrified or go into the electromagnetic fields in terms of what you do with the fascia, then the fascia, when you begin to have a voluminous feeling because of the expansion and contraction of the fascia, then you become aware of the bones. And as soon as you become aware of the bones, then there's more of an electrical process. And this electrical process then can be slowed down by watching the fascia and restricting the fascial reflex, whether it's stretching or returning to its source. And then a hydraulic process occurs because you go through the bones. It's a very, very interesting thing. So when you look at the water body, the water body is composed of only a silent reservoir, really. So it's kind of like, when you look at this, it's kind of confusing, because the emotional body you would expect would be intimately connected to the water body. It's only if somebody's really unresolved on the emotional level, they'll bypass the energy body or the water body or their fascial reflex. They won't even know it's there. So when somebody goes to reach something from a cupboard and they grab and they have a fascial reflex, and the body's been taught to do this, but they totally can't give recognition to that, because the emotions and the mind are totally fixed within a frame, and it's very, very difficult to escape that frame. So when you start to work with the fascia and the water body and also, I believe maybe the musculature is where the emotions are caught. So when the muscles relax and it's wrapped around the fascia, then the fascia gives a certain relief to the muscular reflex, or the piezo energy within the muscle reflex. Yeah,
it's so interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. Such an amazing thing. I noticed it when we were when you were teaching me Lubang Pai a couple of weeks ago, that it starts to happen. It's like the body starts to move on its own. And I was like, this is interesting, and I can just follow. But I could really notice what you're saying. The mind goes really quiet, and yeah, the body kind of takes over. Like I usually say, the mind goes into the back seat, the passenger seat, and the body just starts to drive in a direction which you can't really comprehend in your mind.
Yeah. So once you get to that particular stage, then universal mind is basically storing the memories of universal mind instead of storing the memory of the assigned trauma that you believe you're connected to. But when you understand you are connected to it via intention, then it bursts open and people start to cry and release that. But it's actually being re-socialized by going, like being in a center and then going out with not minded people, but people that you're friendly with. They'll put you back together like a jigsaw puzzle, very covertly, and it seems to be natural, but it's not natural at all. And then you have to undo the re-engineering of that particular individual if they go out of the group. So it's a good idea to have them in a center like yours for a long period of time, so they can disconnect from those triggers. And then when they finally have a sort of gravity inside of them in terms of establishing a new frequency, then they'll begin to read the socialized points, and they can't be led anymore. Once you can't be led, then the first form of freedom really starts to occur, because leading and following is one of the primary emphases behind being socially engineered. And this goes from the highest to the lowest individuals in our community. And there are no really high or low, but we've been putting clans and groups, and this is the way it seems to work, you know. Yeah.
it feels like there's a there's when I work with people, I feel like there's multiple processes going on at the same time. It's the safety that needs to be reestablished through the nervous system, and it's also like just calming down and letting go of everything that is outside, and it's coming in contact with the emotions. But it's also, I feel it's people are also yearning to understand what is going on. So it feels like it's a parallel thing to work with the mind and to work with the body, because it's like a safety. The nervous system is so activated. So it's almost like it feels like it needs to work together with the mind to slow to understand what on a mind level what's going on, because it feels like we're so hijacked by the mind. So it's very difficult to go straight into the body, because it feels like for people that they are stuck because the mind it's like belief systems and the way that they perceive the world, because they sometimes they haven't never come in contact with this kind of process. So do you feel like it's important to help people understand as well as silencing? It's like understanding, talking to the mind and silencing it at the same time almost. I feel like
Yeah, linguistics is a very, very important thing to understand, because linguistics reveal the pre-programming in terms of the delivery of language. Mm-hmm. If you understand linguistics and the triggers within the linguistics, you'll see where you're being set up and where the person has set themselves up to keep a repetitious narrative going on. So if you can catch that very, very quickly, and then the person can examine themselves instead of using linguistics to direct the environment in the same direction as they feel that it needs to be, but to identify where the points of the linguistics in terms of trying to pre-program the environment into an edifice which corresponds to the linguistics that are being used. So if you can become aware of the linguistics, and also the micro gestures within linguistics, the language has a very, very particular frequency in it, so you can identify what the person's really doing with the codes that are hidden within sound. So if you can hear the sound, the code within the sound, the sentence structure may not have anything to do with what they've communicated. But what they've communicated is very, very deeply embedded. And if you understand linguistics, you can see the trap in the linguistics in terms of where the trigger is. And that takes someone away from the very emphasis of what they're doing, and draws another person into the linguistic trap. And once that occurs, then you've got this syndrome of like when you meet somebody that uses something against you, they say, well, you did this 2 years ago, as you're speaking about the point. And when you go to talk about the point that they brought up 2 years ago, as soon as you're halfway through it, they'll bring you to another point so nothing's ever resolved. So you've got to, this is a very interesting thing to watch. And how the loops of repetition have helped somebody stay very, very intelligently, but in a very, very limited way in a circular loop that has no resolve. Yeah. So linguistics and also flares out of that come out of the eyes or come out of the body. So you can spot where the true energetics of the person is displaying. So you can spot those things, you know, in the smallest micro gesture, in the flare coming from the eyes, or see something energetically coming off somebody's body. And, you know, I've noticed over the years that it's very, 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 very difficult for people to realize what they're doing unless they're absolutely willing just to let go of what they're doing with language. And they discover language is the very mechanism that traps the emotion in a place where it can't be relieved, because you've got justifiable points behind every delivery to keep it active.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting, very, very interesting thing to watch. from a even from you could call it even from an anthropological perspective, because you're watching the pre-programming of groups in a society from a worldview or a view from the country in terms of what they're doing, in terms of what they're delivering and what people expect and how they can trigger an emotion which then can be controlled by maybe a larger group or a government or something like this to draw people away from a point which needs to be looked at. Yeah, and this happens in very, very small circles. So you can look at our government and you can say, well, we're looking over here, but they don't want us to see there. And usually, people are pre-organized to do this in their small world, and that this supports the bigger narrative, because everybody's doing what the deception of the world governments are doing to us have been embedded within the communication ability of someone to do exactly the same thing. So we're only amplifying the bigger narrative through the small repetitious pre-programming of individuals in small groups, and that just causes a disconnection. And disconnection is something we have to really, really try and destroy in a positive manner, to destroy what is destroying our humanity, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And humanity is the true feeling, what we really need to do. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that is also when we invite people to this small community, it's like we recreate society also, like how it could work.
Yeah.
Because people say like, oh, I can be actually myself all the time and no one gets offended from me sharing what is going on and what I'm feeling or what is happening. And I realize how I'm not doing that in my environment where I usually come from. And when you talk about the government and that, it feels like there's so many levels of society. Mm-hmm. And that is also why I feel it's important for us to do this work, so people can come to an environment where we actually live. It's not like we have them here and then we just come for sessions and then there's like a pretend environment. That it's actually trying to recreate the new frequency that you talk about, that the a new way of being with each other. It's like a new way of existing, because it's without the tension around, I mean, all of it, like
it's
around the heart. And...
Yeah, it's really, really true. It's very, very interesting. If you look at maybe universal mind is basically in accordance with natural law. So if universal mind attaches to a new frequency, the new frequency is unknown to the individual that's actually accessing the new frequency until it slowly, slowly sinks into the body and becomes a realistic value in terms of communication by the voice establishing a new way to communicate via not thinking and via not going back to repetitive loops. So universal being universally progressive is to maybe if you discover a new frequency in front of you, or you become embedded in that new frequency, it doesn't have mind chatter. It has the unique what would you call it, what's the best word for it? Anyway, it's unique and it's new and it's not viable because you can't use it. So then you let that settle inside of your body, and everybody's got a different configuration in terms of the size of their bones and what they're really meant to do in terms of really their response. We're all loving beings, but we all have different emphasis in terms of why we're here. So you can have this same group of people doing the same movements, but there'll be different results because of the different capacities of individuals. And then you start to amplify the mirror image of those new frequencies through inspiration, instead of the normalized worldview of having a repetitive frequency, which can be pre-programmed. It doesn't really make any sense for our society as a whole, but if we allow ourselves just to be absorbed in this in a new frequency, and consider that our memory. if we consider that a memory, then we're waiting for that memory to occur and become manifest through the function of communication. And the function of communication, if it doesn't have a preemptive thought form, then it's true communication, because the preemptive feeling of this frequency coming up is a realization that we will be tempted via the environment to become manifest, because it hits that new frequency. And the only value of that new frequency is that if something opposing comes towards it, then you've got the answer. But without the frequency being there, without mind, you don't know you've got it until you're challenged. So that's a good reason to be in a community like that. Yeah, so that you can wait for that new frequency to come up. And this is kind of confronting in the beginning, but because if thought forms and narrative hit those frequencies, then they kind of hit something very, very solid, but it's extremely fluid, and it's of a frequency. It's from the Akashic volume of information, which comes from thousands and thousands of years of people practicing not to be normal. And which is absolutely normal, quite frankly, because it's not normal anymore, but it's actually very, very normal to be like this, to respond to the environment in kind, you know, and to see that, and then to truly view yourself in terms of your response. Because if you function with the frequency which arises, it can't compromise your very feeling center. Because if it does compromise, then you're not accessing an old frequency or a new frequency that comes into your body to establish something realistically having value in front of you, which is growing by volume and amplification as it grows, instead of something that's pre-organized that just repetitively loops and has no real resolve. So I'm not going off into a bad tangent here, am I?
No. It really sounds like people are subconsciously trying to reaffirm themselves, like you said in the beginning, right? This is where I'm at, right? And then you want someone to agree with you. And if they don't agree with you, they can feel a confrontation. But what they really feel is what's hidden inside. They can actually start to access that emotion.
Yeah.
Kind of that's where the real work starts.
Yeah, and the only benefit of that is that you can use these areas of pre-programming. When you empty them, they become valuable, because you see the format or the structure of somebody coming at you. You'll see it in gestures in the face, you'll see it in bone structure, because you've given it up. And then it manifests in other people, and then you know who you're talking to. And you know who you're communicating with, because everybody's been subject to this. And it's a matter of escaping it and leaving it, which gives the value of communication by identifying where it is and then knowing how to define it correctly if you've been through it yourself, because everybody's been through everything. Nobody's Robinson Crusoe, really. Yeah.
That's how I feel sometimes, that I've been through everything, that I felt. I said yesterday, it feels like I lived all the lifetimes. It's like I feel like I've been, whatever person comes with, it feels like I've been through that. It's like I know this.
Yeah, and this is timeline convergences happened with everybody during their life. They'll have maybe a 5-year period where they go down, and if they're lucky, they'll get retracted, and they go, oh. And then they won't realize the retraction and the obligation within that timeline, what would occur to them if they would have gone completely down that timeline, got trapped. And most people go down timelines, get trapped, and they want to withdraw. And it's actually very hard to withdraw, because they've established anchors with people. They've established anchors with themselves and expectations. And, you know, usually what I say to people is, you don't feel guilty, and I don't believe anything you said. And I say, you're a good person, you're just under the impression you're not. You know, and and it's very rare that people aren't good. It's very, very rare.
Yeah.
It's only the occasional psychopath that won't realize that that they need to change.
How would you say people can start to do that? Like, how could they start to communicate from a place like that? If I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, I have no idea. How do I even do that? Maybe I'm not even aware that I'm doing it.
Well, it's kind of easy. I mean, it's in an environment where you've got a repetitious loop and a self amplifying circumstance where you've built your circumstance to reflect exactly who you are. So that maybe that's difficult to escape that, because you're, I mean, it's really, if someone stops drinking, then the friends that drunk with them, they say, well, I've stopped drinking. I'll invite you over, and they bring a six pack with them. And that's generally what people do. So they don't want you to escape what they haven't escaped themselves, or they don't want you to change because they need familiarity, because the couch is very friendly. So for people like that, it's to have hope, and to generally be in a state of gratitude is the best transitional point that you can be in. And it's very rarely that people can't say, well, I'm grateful that I woke up this morning. I'm grateful I got a beautiful wife. I'm grateful that I've got a roof over my head. These things are not really taken into consideration. And I'm grateful that I've got a bad neighbor or something like this, because they help me define who I really am and don't define who I'm going to become because of them. So you can be grateful for everything, you know. So for people who don't know how to start, I mean, that's the best way to be grateful for everything. And then to assign that gratitude to the fact that you know, that's all we've got, really. It's really all we've really got, to be grateful for the moments that relieve us from the repetition.
I notice that when people start to release some of the pressure that is in the body from emotions, when they start to come in connection with whatever is unprocessed, and they get that cry and they get that relaxation in the body, then the gratitude comes. I feel like it's very easy for them to connect to the gratitude after they start that process of releasing.
Yeah. And that leads down to another subject matter in terms of false gratitude. False gratitude that has maniacal mechanisms in the background that are hidden. And this is like the false process, or a false spiritual process, believing that you're something and putting a false image of yourself in front when you know you've got the work to do in the background. So everybody, including myself, have things to actually say, well, what do I need to wake up to? And then wherever the slightest trigger is, you're grateful that trigger occurred, so you can humble yourself. Because being humble means gratitude, you know. So that's why it's very good to have a good wife and a good husband, because they'll say, well, maybe you can modify that little bit. And then you look at your own justifications and say, okay, well, I've got to give up that justification now, because she's right.
This is always funny. You always speak to circumstances in very precise manners. Yeah. It really starts from the household. That's what I feel, what you said, you know. It really starts from whatever you consider your household to be, your friends or your family, and it spreads from there, because I mean, that's where we keep ourselves trapped, from what you said, right? That's where repetitive loop is occurring. We are reaffirming ourselves, and you are this and I'm that, and no, but you said this, and I sometimes call it like a game of tennis, you know, like you have a response and reactivity, and we just send it back forward faster and believe that someone will drop the ball and then I'll feel good because something will happen from there. But no one really wins in a situation like that.
Yeah, no one really wins. You know, it's the most enlightening situation, I believe, in terms of our circumstances, your center. And the work that I do is that when you meet people that aren't involved in this, it's a highly enlightening process to watch someone without judging them, and to see where they're trapped, where they're suffering, and to be not having any thought forms towards them, and then seeing them slightly change and then bounce back, and seeing them slightly get better and then bounce back. And it's very, very interesting to see this in terms of outside of your center, outside of my work as well, and then watching people. And the biggest danger for anybody who's going towards a different directive is to accept the people who don't want to change. Yeah. And to accept them is quite an enlightening process for them as well, because they will feel that there's something quite extraordinary. But there's something so intangible that they can't put their finger on. I had somebody that was quite quite horrible for many, many years. And I was kind to them until the point, and then they broke after 4 years. Now they're unbelievably kind, unbelievably open, but it took 4 years of not reacting, of watching and just yielding over and over and over again. It was maddening, but it was a test for me not to go crazy, you know. So, yeah. And then when they change, it's quite beautiful. But when that occurs, it usually what happens is that person that is targeted somebody finds somebody else which amplifies their attitude somewhere else, and they free you and attach it to someone else. And when you see this occurrence, it's really interesting. I'm free, but I can see that they've rediverted their energies to someone else, but they've set me free and started a slow entrapment with someone else. And it's very, very interesting affair to watch people in their behavior that don't go for a higher states of consciousness. They just redirect their energy and then set you free. Like I said, I felt, you know, I didn't react, but because there was no point where they could just bite and keep a hold, then they redirect their attention somewhere else. And then the true journey really begins, because then they start to notice what you say and what you do, because they've got new eyes, because they've got an emphasis somewhere else. And then they realize they tortured you for 4 years and they become a nicer person. So, you know, the whole process is extraordinary, as long as you've got enough patience to deal with it, you know? Yeah. But anyway.
I mean, that's where the own work comes in. I mean, yeah. We've been doing this for a couple of years now, and in the beginning it was very difficult. Sometimes, but we always kept it's always like a mantra, you know, like, this is my own work. It's my own work. If I get affected, it's my own work. I need to take accountability for that. It's not about the other person. It's not about what have I. So like constantly, okay, this is mine. This is mine. This is mine. So it feels like we did the same thing, but with different people instead of you had one.
Yeah. You know, the most difficult thing, like Simba said, for those who don't know how to reach into another reality in terms of an alternate frequency, the most difficult thing for everybody to do is to take consideration of something you see, and you have to be doing a certain portion of yourself to see something. Because once you notice something, you put it into an area of manifestation, but to only give it 2% of your attention in comparison to 98% of being totally involved. So even that 2% is enough to be amplified if you don't give it enough room to disappear inside of yourself and not have a an internal reflexive response from it, which brings justification from somebody's perspective, anybody's perspective. So like if we were to answer the question what Simba asked, is the best way is not to ignore but not to react, to fully acknowledge but not to react, and to look at the trigger inside of yourself. Why am I reacting? How come that I've got no control over this reaction? Why do I need to talk to my wife about it? Why do I need to talk to my husband about it? Why can't I let it settle inside of myself and dissolve that person's behavior? Because it's not communal. It's something that you individually, you've noticed from another individual. If we can stop, then we stop the process inside of ourselves. And it usually takes about 4 days for that to settle down. And then when you see it again, then you won't have that particular doing to it, because the resolved nature of your body has already put it into a reference point of non-response or non-reactivity. And then you've got the power to actually see that person the next time and know what you're going to see. But don't have any triggers of reverse engineering that into your own body as some form of reaction. So that's the best way to start, is not to react and not to reaffirm and soundboard with somebody that doesn't deserve to hear it. Yeah, because we really believe that we deserve to be heard. But if we're very, very quiet and say, okay, what am I doing here? And what am I reproducing by having a response to this situation? And if you stop it completely, there obviously will be a buildup of emotion, because that's the first thing which occurs. And then when that emotion gets large enough, then there'll be a true upheaval. If you pack all these little incidents in, and then you can be free from it, somebody will do it over and over and over again, or you have a different response. And when it gets to the point where the person can actually unravel and say, I just, have to cry, have to release, because even though I've only seen a small portion, I've got no reactivity, you're still collecting. And there's no way to empty that collection unless you have kindness towards your partner, towards your circumstances, and appreciation for the people you really care about. And in actuality, the people you really care about are the people you look at that assign you a feeling that you know that they're harboring something, but you take a portion of it inside of yourself. That person is you at that particular point, because you've taken it inside of your body. So you've replicated that person, and when it builds up inside of you through all the variances, situations, then the true floodgates open, and then when you go into a circumstance where someone can cancel you or someone can work on you, you can just go bang. And then your threshold is immediately you step over a certain boundary, because you've had the discipline not to respond, but in the beginning you don't know how to empty yourself. Yeah, so it starts the journey of collecting something which you don't want to respond to, instead of collecting everything that you're responding to. I don't know whether I'm making sense, but you know, it's a very good way to do it. It's a very honest way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, it does make sense. It really does make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a personal challenge similar to what you said with not past tense, still do. Well, I work with some clients, and I don't think I know best, that's not the point, but sometimes it's very easy when I'm working a certain field to see, okay, what you're doing is not working, and even not working to the point where it's costing them their life, and to, like you said, to not judge it, but to still be there and support it, right? Because it's a really painful process to see someone that goes down that line, for me at least, when I kind of like, but like, you know, you can really solve this. You don't have to be so stuck in this belief system. This is actually costing you your life. But to still have gratitude and compassion for that, that's currently one of my biggest challenges, because there's still a part of me that's like, you know, why won't you accept this help?
Yeah, because it's an emotional danger for someone to open up and to be truly vulnerable, because mainly people from childhood have been given the message that they can't be vulnerable, because they've got to be stuck to a certain standard from the parents, from the uncles, from peers and everything like that, and they learn to be fearful of exchanging the truth, because it's easier for them to exchange acceptance through accepting something which is not really acceptable. And really, that's how it begins. Yeah.
I mean, it feels like it's always this fear of what is bubbling up. I feel like there is like a misconception between, okay, this doesn't feel good, like I shouldn't do this, and this doesn't feel good, it's uncomfortable, but I need to feel this in order to heal. I feel like in the beginning, people are having difficulties with what is what. It's like, this feels super unsafe for me, so how do I know what is right and what is wrong? But it's like this uncomfortableness that we need to face within ourselves in order to heal. But also teaching people to connect to their intuition, and because their body can also tell you what is right and what is wrong. But in the beginning of the healing process, I feel like those two are mixed up, and that a lot of people can't move forward because of that, because the fear is in the way. And I know who you're talking about here, Simba, and I feel like that is what's happening. It's like they don't trust the body. They don't know. This is so, it feels so uncomfortable. It cannot be safe. Mm. So it feels like they're locked in. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that could be a trick, though. That's a trick to make you feel guilty and make you feel uncomfortable, because if you feel guilty and you feel comfortable, then they can't unravel. That sounds like a modus operandi of a certain way of behaving to make sure people can't interchange different elements of awareness, because it's blocked. Mm-hmm. So if someone guilts you or someone puts you into, I don't trust you, you got to ask yourself the question, get them to ask themselves the question is, why do they come there to be, to exchange and to evolve, but they say, oh, I don't trust you, but I'm here to learn. It's happened to me quite a lot. So it is a mechanism that people use to stop the exchange or stop the evolutionary process of realizing what they're doing. Because if you put guilt onto somebody else, shame and blame are the biggest imprisoners of biggest prison for open communication. Because if you feel guilty, how can you possibly, if they put you into a state of guilt, I don't trust you, because that's what they're putting you in, a state of guilt. I don't trust you. Why not? You came here. You got to do the work. You got to just unravel and try and accept that this exchange will grow into something new. But maybe this tactic is to keep the person in a state of non-resolve, because you're fearful of saying anything, because you're not trusted. And that can snowball into something else. Because if someone says, I don't trust you, you can say, well, what can explode from that statement in terms of how can they attach that to any of my behavior in terms of confronting them? It's a labyrinth.
It feels like people are stuck in that. And that is, and sometimes I feel like, oh, is that person's karma to not resolve that in this lifetime?
When you look at the word karma in terms of the circumstances, they've created their own mechanism, which is their own reactive, reflective components of information inside of themselves, which stops the evolutionary process. Mm-hmm. That feeling is karma because it's a trap.
Yeah,
karma. That's karma. What I mean. Karma is just it's basically a trap. Yeah,
it's like when I see people like that, it feels like they have a bubble and it's locked from the inside.
Yeah,
it's like you can't unlock it from the outside. They have to unlock it from the inside.
Yeah, but the corresponding point of feeling, when someone's locked like that and they put you into a guilt position and say, I don't trust you, is any feeling that's produced from the person who said from the person who's got the feeling they don't trust me, there's a karmic line there. So then the karmic result in terms of the amplification of the input of that is then determined by how much guilt has gone inside of the person questioning their own ability to function, because that's one of the mechanisms of disempowerment. I don't trust you. You better feel guilty. You better not have resolve. You better not be empowered. And I'll stay the same and I'll destroy your clarity. That's a karmic response in terms of the pull that comes from individuals like this. Yeah. I'm bad, aren't I?
No, it's super interesting. Yeah. Super interesting.
Very, very interesting indeed. And it feels like, that kind of really limits true communication, you know, because... Yeah. That's what I see a lot sometimes when people are in strong emotions. Mm-hmm. I mean, it happens to me too, but you kind of justify the emotion. No, I feel like this, so I'm expressing it. So you have to understand what I'm saying. You have to agree with me. Otherwise, you're triggering me or you're not listening to me. And,
And this goes back to this goes back to what we said before in terms of if you can stop talking to yourself and stop soundboarding for a certain amount of time, that will destroy the bubble that they've surrounded themselves with, because they won't be able to amplify it or manifest it over and over again in different scenarios. So then instead of causing a guilt loop between you and somebody else, or they're saying I don't trust you, then they've caused a feeling which is advantageous for their ability not to change. So if you don't have the feeling, then you don't have the karmic response, and they don't get the reflexive action from you being demoted to a person who is disempowered and inadequate in comparison to their delivery in terms of saying I don't trust you. So this is a very, very interesting mechanism, because they're creating the loop of feeling which promotes their power, because that is a power. The intellect is a form of power. It's a lower form of power. Bad emotions are a form of power. And not thinking is a form of power, and not reacting is a form of power, and compassion and gratitude is a form of power. So they're using a power. So if they can understand they're using a power, a detrimental power, which is a power, which is a karmic power, which won't release. So if they can ask themselves to stop. So if someone guilts you and say, I don't trust you, and you say, well, you've got to stop that, because that will cause non-resolve for you, because that feeling is basically there for a reason. And you've got to ask them, why is that there? You know, and having non-trust. And it usually is, I can escape whenever I want to, because as soon as you say something which isn't what would you say, which I don't really agree with, then they've got the choice to leave. And the choice to abandon the situation, which means that they've abandoned the very, very person who's identified it. And then they know that when they leave inappropriately, they injure the person who's trying to help them. And the person will say, well, I feel unsuccessful. I feel like I failed. And it's because of that, I don't trust you, is the mechanism which causes the person who wants to help to be degraded into a position of being abandoned. And once that occurs, then you've got to rebuild yourself back to be confident again that you know what to do the next time. Yeah. So there's this very tricky perceptual trap. I don't trust. Am I being naughty?
No, you're not. No. It's really landing. So that's why, you know, that's why the silence is definitely landing. And yeah, so you were mentioning, like in this case, you had a person in your vicinity that it took 4 years of you not being reactive. That's how I saw it. You weren't reactive and you weren't feeding into that interaction. Mm. And you went on to the next person or...
Yeah, that's right. But they weren't my student. They didn't come to me. So I don't reveal who I am. I don't display anything. I'm just a normal person. So if I'm a normal person, I'll get an appropriate response instead of a false response, because I put myself on a pedestal. So if they don't know who I am, it's a long-term process. But if somebody knows who you are and they come to you purposely, then you're empowered to actually speak on their behalf. Yeah, and then you're empowered to see your interchange and how you evolve through that exchange. And through that evolutionary process, you grow and the person wakes up. But with people outside of your center, or people outside of my realm of influence, so I just watch them from a distance. And as you watch them from a distance, then if they're truly aware, they will realize who you are. But it usually takes a long time to realize, because nonverbal communication, non-physical revealing, it takes a long time for someone to realize who you are, because they'll project clothing upon you. They'll make you dress something. They'll dress you in something that you don't belong in. And they'll see that clothing on you and confirm it to themselves that that's what you're wearing when you're actually not. But in the circumstance where someone comes to you, then you're dressed in a healer's uniform, and you know, and that's your job. And if they ask for help, then you do the best you can. Yeah. So there are only two circumstances really, where you can't talk and where you can talk. And when you can't talk, there's a highly, highly enormous amounts of information occur to you. And when you can talk, enormous amounts of information occur to you. So yeah. it's a very beautiful thing.
It's very interesting when we live like this, when people move in. I can feel when they are addressing me in their poverty, but I don't take it personally, because I feel like that is a natural way of the process. It's like, if I'm not able to hold that, this won't work at all, because I feel like it's like I'm dressed in the healer's uniform and you say that's my job. I feel like it's my job to hold that space and not reflect that back to them, not all the time, because that's not possible, because they I feel like they need to be in their process and to give them an amount of space to actually it almost like people are going through, it's like they're living things in their lives that they weren't able to express. It feels like it's a lot of family dynamics that comes to the surface that they might not be aware of at all, and that I'm usually the one that takes on the that. So Simba is the nice one, and I'm the authority that they kind of
good cop and bad cop.
Yes, yes, because Simba is the super understanding one and like super kind and does all the trauma work. And I'm more the authority and does the energy work and do the mirroring. So usually I'm the one that gets some of the heat. But I feel also that I don't take that personally. I feel like that's part of the process, that it's part of what I do for them. It's like my service to them to allow them to go through that. Because when they go through it, they also see what they do when they spend some time with us, because I also eventually mirror that back to them and they go, oh, and then they understand. And they, I feel like that, that one of the biggest thing is that they, we allow them to do that, to not like, oh, you can't do that to me. Or you it's like,
well, what was that?
Huh?
You say, what was that?
Yeah. And go, yeah.
What?
I do that. Yeah. I mean, I do that also. But yeah. I give them a lot of slack in the beginning, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really a big job. I mean, if you really look at it honestly, it's if you take on this journey, it's a tuku's journey. It's basically reestablishing your methods, your terminologies, and your way of communicating to grow yourself. And it's not easy because you get another person coming and doing virtually exactly the same thing over and over and over again. So it's a big job, and it's a big deal to put anybody to put themselves in this position actually. And they have to know that that's if that's the only alternative, that's the only alternative. Once you choose what your life path is, then you've got to follow through completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what we're doing. I feel like it's the way it has to be.
Yes, the way it has to be.
Yeah. But it's beautiful.
It is. It is.
I have a reflection, and that is that there's a lot of women coming. I mean, it feels like the work that we predominantly do is with women, and that they don't know what it is that they are looking for. They just feel like something isn't right. They say like, this can't be it. Is this the only thing that my life is supposed to be? There's such a strong feeling that something is not right. And they have so much courage and they're so brave to dive right into the depths of themselves that is super uncomfortable and super like, they feel like it's very dark. It's on the unknown, but they are so brave, and they also come out on the other side, and they say that I want to help other people. So I feel like there's a lot of women that they don't know what's going on, but they feel like I need to stand up, I need to do something, I need to go within, heal myself, and then I want to help other people. That has changed like exponentially the last couple of years. That it's the woman that is so easy to work with also, that they just get it. It's like they don't understand how they get it, but they just get it.
Well, I think it's equally for male and female, actually, in terms of, yeah, it is really, really true. Women are very, very sensitive, very beautiful, very intuitive. But it's also from the perspective of just being a human being without identifying. But I think we're all faced with very, very big challenges in terms of what we need to do, what we need to realize. And it's I mean, geez, when I look at my students, I've got a lot of beautiful students which are soft, genuine, gentle women that realize more efficiently than what a male does in the beginning, because males are a little bit blocked. They truly are in terms of the heart process. But there are a lot of good men coming to the surface at the moment. Yeah. Yeah, because we really need to be protectors, and the women are nurturers, and this can't really change, really, when you look at it, because we've got to be strong and soft simultaneously, and so does the woman. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the reverse. It's like having the nurturing base and being strong as well.
You know, from a Chinese perspective, a woman is soft on the outside but harder than men on the inside. A man is hard on the outside, but generally softer on the inside. You know, it's very interesting. It's very, very interesting, because when you look at this, you just reverse engineer it, and we're both very, very similar. It's just that it's just the process, just a tiny bit different.
Mm-hmm. So when you say strong on the inside, what does that mean?
Well, the men are demanded to have to be a certain way. Women are demanded to be a certain way in terms of assignments, in terms of gender, because men are stronger than women, actually. You know, so it's physically. So it takes a lot for a man to put down his physical strength and come to his heart process, where a woman has to defend a heart process through a form of strength. Mm. So it's This is a difficult subject, really. When you even look at it, I don't really believe there should be any general assignment. There just should be a heart awakening in terms of the process of communication. But I don't know how to answer the question, or even confirm or even affirm anything like that. You know, so it's I think you're a beautiful person. I think Simba's a beautiful person. You're quite a good combination, really. So it's and I'm sure you bounce off each other. And confirm and affirm and love each other. So it's we're really, I wouldn't be anything without my wife, quite frankly. She makes me the man I am, and my wife is the way she is because of the way I am towards her. So there's a very, very beautiful process, as long as both genders realize that there's a place for both of us, you know. So if we have a loud bang like we did the other, we had some thunder going, and sound like someone rattled the door. I got up and she shivered in the bed. So it's like I'm there to protect her, and then we go back. Then I go back to bed, and if something happens to me, she gives me a hug. You know, so it's like there are certain dangers that a woman nurtures, and a certain danger where men are responsive. And we kind of if we can understand this balance and this natural balance, then you know, it's a beautiful thing. I believe, you know. Yeah. I don't really see any difference between men and women when it comes to the process of opening the heart in a lot of ways. Mm. Yeah. I'm terrible, aren't I?
No.
Sorry, Sarah.
No.
I think you opened something up. I think that's it.
Yeah. Very much.
Because in a lot of ways, you know, I see a lot of men in society that aren't willing to evolve, and I see women exactly the same, bullish tyrants, and you see bullish tyrants in men as well. And you can see the same characteristics in a male that you can see in a female. And you can see you can't unlock that door, because there's a certain determination which seems too masculine for a woman, and you can see the determination and the block of wood of a man and his determination. You can't open that up either. So if you look at it from this perspective, you know, you've met women like this, you've met men like that, and when you get into the field of evolution, you discover that both are just as soft, just as vulnerable, and both tending to the fact that they're going to the journey of their end of their life. And when you get to that, there's no difference. If I look at my wife, I would say, well, I don't see her as a woman. I see her as my counterpart, the portion of myself which is missing.
Yeah.
You know, because she's my soulmate, and vice versa. And if we harmonize properly, then we become one being. And if we become one being, the genders are thrown out the window.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow, that's beautiful. That made me super emotional.
Yeah,
because beautiful.
Yeah, so when you go to bed, isn't that you expand into each other? And you don't see male or female when you go to sleep, but you expand into each other's energy field. You share proteins and everything like that. You begin to look like each other. You begin to mimic each other's feelings. You get up and you know exactly what the other person's going through slight gestures, and then you begin to grow through that. So the definition of difference is not really there when the heart process is totally connected to your personal growth and to the inevitability that person's going to disappear one day, and you meld as one person, and then you see the other person's processes as more important than yours, and then this occurs between both individuals, and then you realize that we need each other.
Hmm.
Yeah, and if we can do this, then the world will change, quite frankly. Yeah, why are you crying, lovely?
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, and I know you guys have got this too. You know, it's a beautiful process.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely beautiful process.
Yeah, it's beautiful to see how we grow over the years and how we let go of things that are keeping us from being one person, you know?
Yeah.
And allowing that process to continue and just trusting that and just allowing it to fall off step by step.
Yeah, and if you look at this even a little bit more deeply in terms of the micro gestures of your partner may not be obvious, but you've melded with your partner. So if a male sees the micro gestures of their partner and he goes in and gives a comfort to that, aren't you the same being, and vice versa? When you see something that Sim is going through and you see his micro gestures, you don't attack that, but you go to love it, you go to give it nourishment, and then you give him the possibility, and you the possibility when male and female do this, then you become symbiotically the perfect circle of accompaniment. You know, so it's very, very important, I really believe, to actually see this, because if I speak to a male in my office, I'll speak to them like I'm speaking to Misper. If I see something which is different to what I would see in Misper, because she's very, very beautiful, very soft and very open, I will talk to that. If I see the same thing in a female, I'll talk to it. And if something's missing that I don't get from my partner, I'll say, well, you have to look at that. And then the exchange of what they expect from me, whether it's male or female, the appropriate elements of information which comes from a beautiful bond and from a relationship of marriage, gives you the resources to actually see what's missing. So then you become androgynous, but not androgynous in the terms you give up your male or your female framework, but your androgyny is the melding of your partnership in terms of this symbiotic process.
Mm.
And when you don't see male or female, then you see a human being. And then you communicate with that human being. It doesn't matter about sex anymore. It doesn't matter about what the genitals they've got. It matters about what heart process is in front of you.
Mm. I love that.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, super beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow, we've talked for more than an hour. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we should finish off here.
Okay.
Thank you so, 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 so much for joining.
Yeah, thank you. This was lovely and therapeutical at the same time.
Yeah, I love you guys. You know, you're so nice.
I love you too.
Really. Yeah.
We love you so much.
Yeah.
So thank you. And if people are like, oh my God, who is this guy? I want to know more. Where do they find you?
Parallelperception.com. Yeah. Yep. I've got a website, and
That's where it is.
I have a hard time selling myself. I've always been this way.
That's okay. Yeah. What we started with, you have a lot of books that explains your journey and the process you do, and I think the books are a really good place to start to read them, because there's a lot of wisdom in them, and yeah, it's kind of like listening to you. You know, it starts a process reading the book. I read them over and over again, and every time I read a book, I come from a new place because I've evolved. So I might see something that I previously didn't see. So the books was really how I started. And then, you know, meet you in for private sessions and group sessions that you do. But I think the main thing that really connected for me was when I started to do the Lubanpai, the energy movements that you teach. That was very profound. You know, it was just a lot of levels that started to connect for me. You know, I could know a lot of the aspects you talked about intellectually, but to feel the fascia, like you said in the beginning, like, oh, wait a minute, what happened? It was checkmate for the mind. You know, it's like, where did my thoughts go? where am I at, right? Something else appeared and something disappeared. So yeah, there's many levels that I say when it comes to your work that I appreciate, you know, the books, the online guidances, the group courses, and definitely the Luban Pai that has many steps. So yeah, if you're watching this, really go into the website and feel free to write us or to them directly, definitely, and we can guide you and see what.
Yeah, I think the best book to go for is Power of Emptiness.
Yes. Mm.
And if you backtrack from Power of the Emptiness to Who Am I, and then to Whisperings of the Dragon, because the first three books were really to deconstruct shamanism, even though I was influenced by that very strongly, and the deconstruction of that and the ideas around that needed to be really examined. So I did that with the first three books, but the last book is sort of like a compilation of teachings which have got to do with actual events which are hidden inside of the book. Yeah, so, and it's kind of beautiful, but thank you for that, Simba. I wouldn't have even realized to talk about the books.
But the level of transformation that you went through with the 5-day course that you did previous, not long ago, that is amazing, the level of change that can occur in such a short period of time.
Yeah, it's a matter of just becoming aware of the different frequency and then coexisting with the new frequency as a memory instead of the past being dominant. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay, guys. A
beautiful day, and
you too.
I'll see you Saturday.
See you soon.
Okay, we'll see you Saturday. Okay. Yeah. Lots of love, guys. Thanks for
Lots
having
love.
Me.
Yeah.
Okay. Lots of love.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.